Welcome to another episode of the Forged by Trust podcast. I am your host, Robin Driek, and before we dive into today's episode, Trust Yourself, Trust Others, where Joe and Abby and I discuss intrinsic and extrinsic trust, self-awareness, and the influence of shame, I want to remind you to please like the show on your favorite podcast streaming platform and please leave us a review so that more people can benefit from these amazing thought leaders as they share their insights on life. Also, if you are interested in exploring more ways that you can dive deeper into the skills of forging trust, check out my first book, It's Not All About Me, which is now also available in audiobook, as well as my online courses available on my website, www.peopleformula.com. Also, make sure you tune in next week to my chat with my good friend Alex Price in the episode Hide and Seek with a Skip Tracer. And if you're wondering what a skip tracer is, you'll have to tune in to find out. On today's episode, I have my two close friends and most popular guests returning together, the world-renowned body language and behavior expert, as well as best-selling author Joe Navarro and the body language prodigy Dr. Abby Morano. Joe spent 25 years at the FBI working both as a special agent and supervisor in the fields of counterintelligence and counterterrorism. Through his work, he was able to study, refine, and apply the science of nonverbal communication. His acumen in this field and his success as a spy catcher led Joe to begin training FBI agents and the intelligence community at large. Retiring from the FBI in 2003 and meeting overwhelming demand for his notable insights into human behavior, Joe has dedicated himself to speaking and consulting with major corporations worldwide. Since 2009, Navarro has become a regular contributor to Psychology Today magazine. He is also the author of 13 books, and after 11 years, Joe Navarro's What Everybody Is Saying remains the number one selling body language book in the world and translated into 29 languages. His book, The Dictionary of Body Language, is a bestseller in 11 languages, and his new book, Be Exceptional, on how to master the five traits that set extraordinary people apart is now available. It's exceptionally awesome to have Joe on board again today. And on September 19th, 2022 this year, The Behavior Company and Joe Navarro are presenting a live course in Amsterdam on dangerous personalities, how to identify them, and what you can do to protect yourself. Check out the show notes for more details on that. And joining Joe today is Dr. Abby Morano. Abby is a nonverbal communications and social influence coach and has been a university lecturer on social psychology. Abby began publishing scientific articles on nonverbal communication at 19 years old and went on to do her PhD in behavior analysis before founding and directing the research group Brink. Dr. Morano has recently become the Director of Education at Social Engineer and works to apply scientifically proven methodologies to test, educate, and protect organizations' human network from information security threats. So with that, sit back, relax, and join our conversation about all aspects of human behavior. Abby and Joe, thank you for joining me today. As I was thinking about this and preparing, and we each know each other really pretty well at this point, but I was thinking about this. I get nervous every time I do one of these shows because I have amazing guests that are always humbling me in some way. And with y'all's background, I was literally thinking to myself, wow, I'm about to stand before the Jedi Council between two Jedi Masters. And so I'm sorry for the inner geek coming out in me, but that's what it literally feels like, because as I've listened and learned from both you, Abby, I know we've only met a number of months ago, but I literally walk away from every conversation and dialogue thinking, wow, how little I know about the world and universe. And so thank you for coming on. Two of hands down my most popular guests I've ever had on. You two are always neck and neck with downloads. And we'll see if Abby pulls ahead with her latest one that was just released. But because the content is so incredibly valuable. And so what I thought we'd really start out with, and this is something I think I got a tinge of it, but I wasn't paying attention of it. But I think I get asked this a lot by people that are interacting. That is, how did you two meet?
That's... I'm still recovering from the Jedi thing. That's humbling. Thank you. Coming from you, from whom I've learned a lot, especially in the area of trust and kindness. I think, Abby, I think you can actually explain this better than I can, because this all started with David, right? Well, with David Keating.
Yeah, it started years ago when I was 19 when I was 18 even, I started working on my first research paper, and I started working with David Keatley, who was my lecturer at the time. And we reached out to Joe because we were big fans of his book, and he was interested in being involved in the research. And I remember I was too nervous to actually meet Joe at that point. We communicated via email only a couple of times. And I remember you'd said to me, you know, if you want to have a Skype and talk about it, it'll be great to meet you. I was far too nervous to have a Skype and meet you. And then when I became a lecturer and when I was finishing off my PhD, I joined a research group. And then I reached out to Joe to see if he would want to be in my research group. And it's funny how close we got quite quickly, because I reached out to you just about a research project looking at the lower body.
Right.
And we had so many ideas that we kind of spoke once and you said you were really interested. And then we spoke again a couple of times. And then I don't know how it translated into us speaking so regularly, just constant conversations about research and science and body language.
I think what happened, and that is exactly what happened. I think my interest was, when David had reached out to me, this was the first time that, now I at that point I had been giving lectures every year at Harvard, but that was just, you know, to come in and just do a couple of hours lecture. This is the first time a researcher had actually approached me and said, you know, it's about time we start validating some of these things that Robin, you and I see or saw in the theater of the interview or on surveillance and stuff. And I thought that was fascinating, because, you know, in the area of body language, there's always so much emphasis on the face and so forth. And here David and now Dr. Marogno, who I've seen grow up over a 7-year span, I think, was interested in looking at beyond the face and looking at the hands and the feet and the body and what we can infer from that. So I was very much eager to participate with that. And then I was honored when David added me on to some of the research papers that were originally done. But I think I was motivated by the fact that you see the efficacy of, well, you know, why go into an area that's already been covered by so many people?
Yeah.
Why don't we look at what hasn't been covered? Because as we all three of us know, the whole body communicates. So for me, and the research continues. So we're excited for that.
And sitting from the objective third party observer's point of view, Yes. I mean, both you imbibe this great humility, but balance that dichotomy with competence. And so when you have humility and competence come together, and you both have this incredible curiosity, and when you have that overlapping priorities of interests, it just all just naturally flows. It was funny, Joe, when you're saying that the conversation, it was just so easy to get into what Abby was doing. I remember when you introduced me to Abby, and Abby and I, when we first chatted, I'm listening to you and I'm like, oh my gosh, we believe the same things about trust and body language. I'm like, and that when it comes to deception indicators, that, well, you just gave up on that research because that's just bunk. So, and we focused on the trust aspect. And as I love our mutual friend, Jack Schaefer says, instead of trying to detect deception, be a truth detector instead. It's much easier. Inspire someone to tell the truth rather than trying to detect deception. So thank you for the backstory. 7 years. I didn't realize it was that long. So wow. Thank you for sharing her with the world, Joe.
Well, I think that's when David first approached me. And I think this is before he went to Australia, that right?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, this was about 7 years ago when we first communicated. And that was when I was at Lincoln as an undergrad. And so was David. And then David moved to Australia. I started my PhD. And Joe and I didn't speak for a long time because we weren't like close at that point. And it was when I started my research group that we kind of reconnected. And then I think we both just realized that we were both really curious and wanted to discover the same things. I mean, Joe's work and his books have been a huge inspiration for my research. And we've been working really, really hard to take what he's observed and now bring it to the scientific food and validate everything. And we have been, you know, all the observations that he's made, we're now putting into research studies and, you know, they're being validated.
Which goes into one of Joe's five traits of the exceptional, and that is observe. And I was just, matter of fact, Abby, you and I have been talking about this recent book. It's sitting right there. I'm reading The Laws of Nature. I mean, Laws of Human Behavior by Robert Greene. And his first whole section is on human behavior and nonverbal behavior. And he has a quote in there I'm going to use in one of my podcasts. It's really simple. Observe, observe, observe. It just it's what a simple title. But today's title, we're calling this Trust Yourself, Trust Others. For all my episodes so far, we've been really focused on observing trustworthy behavior in others, assessing others for creating those good, healthy, strong relationships and managing our expectations so we can have those healthy relationships. But you two came out with an article not too long ago, which you just caught my attention and we've chatted about before, having to do with the microbiome internally. And then we had a further talk. And we have these two, again, life is all dichotomies because when you balance them, you have a great understanding, the extrinsic trust and intrinsic trust. And I think what a great topic today, kind of shifting our focus from observing externally, which will always be part of it, but let's kind of focus internally on the intrinsic. How do we trust ourselves in all these situations and the things that motivate us? They create fear and a hot topic we'll talk about, and that is shame inside of us. So let's talk about intrinsic trust and your observations on those motivations, if we could. Any thoughts to kick us off?
When we talk about intrinsic trust, it's that, you know, trusting ourselves. We know that in the clinic of food, and we say the relationship we have with ourselves is the foundation of every other relationship that we have. But it completely is. And it's not just in our romantic relationships. Our relationship with ourselves and our ability to understand what is going on inside of our bodies, inside of our heads, is the foundation of every relationship, be it professional, be it personal, and be it everything in between. Because our relationship with ourselves affects, you know, how we regulate our emotions, the kind of behaviors we take, whether they're healthy, unhealthy, the kind of food we consume. All of these things we don't typically associate with trust. But when somebody is in a really negative way, you know, things we hear when they're suffering from mental health is, you know, I don't trust myself. You know, I don't want to be alone because I don't know what I would do. Or, you know, I don't know if I should have that glass of wine because I don't trust myself to stop. And these things are all intrinsic trust. And these parts of our life massively affect our ability to trust other people. If we can't regulate our own emotions and understand why we feel certain ways, then we can't successfully communicate with other people and regulate our relationships in a stable and healthy way.
Absolutely. In order to lead others, we have to first learn how to lead ourselves, which I think goes into this. And Joe, you've had a lot of experience, especially I keep harping on your last book, Be Exceptional, because you have some really revealing stories in there that I found really demonstrate a lot of great vulnerability, which inspires trust, but also took you trusting yourself and overcoming different aspects of your life. Can you talk about any of those, about how you managed that internal intrinsic trust to be able to have confidence, yeah, be able to share those things and make the decisions you did?
Yeah. Thanks for plugging the
can't
the
help
book.
It. It's too good.
You know, that it took me and Tony 12 years to write. And some of it was difficult precisely because of what Abby's talking about. That along the way in my career, just as in your career, you run into things that challenge you. And yes, most of the time we're assessing for the trustworthiness of others, but there are times where we have to assess our own trustworthiness. And I think one of the ones in the book that I was referring to was a SWAT operation that we had. And this had been days in the planning. And as you know, these things aren't planned in 5 minutes. You've got to, you know, rehearse. You've got to have the equipment. You've got to have the aerial platforms to support your communication, the medical personnel in case something goes wrong and so forth. And then in the middle of it, I found myself just mentally weak. I wasn't asking the right questions. My mind was foggy. And I was a team leader, and I was like, what is going on? And I went to the special agent in charge at the time, which was Alan McCrite, great guy. And I said, I got to pull myself out of this operation. I said, and he looked at me. Well, at first I said, I've got to pull somebody out. And he says, you do what you have to do. We had worked a lot together. And I said, no, the guy I got to pull out is me. And he stopped to process for a minute and he said, you do what you have to do. And I couldn't live at that moment with the realization that, you know, as a team leader, I was going to be number three in that conga line in the SWAT line, right behind the breacher and the first guy in. And what if my, you know, what if my mind's foggy? You know, you can't do that. You can't do that to your team. And so I took myself out, and that was hard. It was hard to do it then. And it was hard to talk about it because I think, you know, when we look at intrinsic issues, you could see it as, well, this is in the area of weaknesses, right? Mm. Do I fear that this drink, one more drink, is going to somehow harm me? Do I, you know, the apprehension of doing things. And I think this trust, it's an interesting phenomena in societies. So as you know, I've studied anthropology now since the 1970s, just as an aside. In the societies where you have coming of age rituals, which are really hard written in that society. So by the time you're 14, and in some cultures, even earlier, they say from now on, you are an adult. You have the coming of age ceremony, and that's it. You're an adult. You're treated as an adult. You're moved away from your maternal mother. And now you are with the warriors and so forth. And in those societies, you don't have to worry about intrinsic trust because society has sort of imbued you with that. In places as in the West, where we are given great latitude and... you say, well, when does a Western child grow up? Well, in some neighborhoods, never. You know, right. You then have to really rely on yourself. And that's what's interesting is the more freedom and latitude we have, the more we have to be self-aware and ask ourselves, do I trust myself to be in this setting? Do I trust myself to be with these friends? Do I trust myself to not get involved in things? So it's you know, when you mentioned this the other day, the trust, it's really complex. If we don't have those guardrails that society used to impose, then we really have to. This is why I think, you know, when you wrote your book, the Code of Trust, which sits right behind me, this was an issue that I think was underrated. And that is that how do you venture forth if society doesn't have those guardrails? You have to have those guardrails. And it begins with the intrinsic trust that you ask yourself, can I do this? Should I do this? Is this the best way to do it? And honestly, am I the best person to do this?
Tough questions, especially in a society where we're constantly, both culturally as well as genetically and biologically, we're fearing being judged and being ostracized from the group and the collective. So we're hiding these aspects of ourselves and we right. start believing our own lies to ourselves. And yet we're so outwardly focused trying to assess others that we miss these internal cues. And you, you both, Abby, in your last episode with me, you were extremely vulnerable, I thought, when you're sharing your challenges that you had when you first started your PhD program. I mean, everyone, and you too, Joe, everyone sees these remarkable human beings, these remarkable individuals for who they are today in the now and the present. And when we're self-judging, we think, oh, well, look, it was an easy path for them. I must really be horrible. I must not be able to be good enough to achieve these things. Yet they don't know, like the stories that Joe told in that book and what he just revealed right now, or that Abby, the challenges that you had, learning how to discipline yourself to become this PhD at such a young age. And not just by title, but by execution, because you don't create friends with like Joe Navarro, who is a global expert on nonverbal behavior, because you just have a title. It's because you actually exude these things, which comes from, I think, this great vulnerability. And Joe said it, the self-awareness.
Yeah, so, I think.
Go ahead.
So Joe really hit the nail on the head with that self-awareness. And it's probably the hardest thing for us to confront, because to truly trust ourselves, we have to truly look at ourselves. So, you know, we have to take control of, you know, as Joe said, who am I? Now, what do I want to be? Why do I do these things? We have to really go back to what we've done, things we regret, because we're all human beings. We've all done things we regret. We all, you know, say things we regret. We all behave in ways that no longer reflect the person that we see ourselves today as. And we all have insecurities. And to truly trust ourselves, we have to go back and look at those people, look at that person that we were, and look at the things that we did and say, this, you know, this is who I was. Okay. And I confront the fact that this is who I was and this is what I did, but I no longer want this to represent me. So we can't just push it to the side and say, well, this isn't who I am, so I'm going to pretend it's not there. We have to face them. We have to look at those hard parts. We have to look at our mental health. We have to reflect on not only, you know, what did I do, but why did I do it? What was making me do those things? Do I still feel the way that I felt when I was behaving that way and I'm not dealing with it? Because probably if I do, in the future, I'm going to behave that way again and I'm not going to be fully in control. So it's so tough to have this self-awareness, because it is uncomfortable. You know, we like to stay in this comfortable state of not looking at our mistakes, but we have to face them. We have to face the things we've done and be uncomfortable in ourselves and work towards a person that we say, okay, well, this is who I want to be. I'm not there yet. I've got a long way to go. And that's a hard realization too. But that's something, again, that we have to face if we want to truly trust in ourselves, in our ability to be better.
So you said we explore the why of these things, but if we want to take action, you start with the second word you use, and that is what caused these things. And so that's my question to both of you. I think this is the trickiest, most challenging thing for any human being, is to raise their level of self-awareness where they can actually look at themselves without self-loathing, let go of that shame, which we're going to transition to in a few minutes, and say, okay, I want to work on X, Y, and Z because I'm not good in X, Y, and Z without beating myself up. So what would you recommend as the first 1, 2, maybe 3 steps? Where does someone start that process of saying, okay, I have work to do, but I'm not going to hate myself for having to do the work?
I mean, it's tricky to set out steps of, okay, this is exactly how you go, because everyone's journey is so personal. You know, what might be the right approach for me might not be for anybody else. But I think it all starts with awareness, you know, that sitting, getting uncomfortable, laying out what we've done and figuring out, okay, what triggered this? Are there any life events? Am I feeling emotionally unstable? And then once you start to kind of pinpoint what went wrong or what your trigger points might be, you know, lay out healthy behaviors. And I think it's all mindset, you know, that case of, you know, maybe I'm not where I want to be. And you don't have to wake up every morning and bounce out of bed to be healthy and to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. You just have to wake up and say, I'm working on it. I remember when I was going through a really tough period of my life in the second year of my PhD, I was really unhappy. And, you know, you have those moments where you get out of bed and think, I just want to stay in bed. And I was getting up every morning at 6 a.m., going to the gym, working a long day, and then going back to the gym and eating healthy, coming home. I was showing all of those healthy behaviors, but I was so unhappy. But every day I woke up with that mindset of, I'm not happy today. I'm not where I want to be, but I will be. I will be better and I will trust myself. And that's where it starts with getting, laying everything out right and then getting the right mindset. And then speaking to a professional. You know, if you don't know what to eat that's healthy, if you have a physical or physiological issue that you don't understand, speak to a doctor. If you're not happy in your career, speak to your boss, speak to your colleagues, speak to someone with experience. Learn from experts, you know, read the research too, you know, read self-help books, read anything you can that you think will help you, you know, watch lectures online, anything that you think could be a source of information to help guide you.
Joe?
Yeah, that's great advice. There's so much available now out there. You know, what I would say is, and I've personally done this, that's actionable, is take a moment to reflect and say, at this moment in time, with whatever's going on, why do I feel insecure? Why do I feel as though I can't trust myself in this? And be honest. And what's interesting is when you are introspective, and I know you've read this in the book, that self-awareness in the process of mastery of self, we have to ask ourselves in which areas don't I trust myself? And I remember being in the mountains in West Virginia when we were doing the SWAT training and we had to do mountain climbing and
great story, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know, it's here I am, the rappel master, and I really don't like heights all that much, but you're going to do it because you were volunteered. As you know, in the FBI, you get volunteered for a lot of things. You had no idea. And so, you know, and I think what helps is you realize, okay, I don't trust myself. Turn to those that you do trust and ask them. And that's when the guy that was helping me at the time there on the mountain, the instructor said, I've got confidence in you. I've seen you. I've seen you in training. You're not going to fall off the mountain. We're not going to let you fall off the mountain. There's too many mammals to ride if you fall off the mountain. And so I think sometimes we have to turn to others when we have these insecurities, when we don't have this trust. And go to those who are trustworthy, the extrinsic. That's why we assess for trustworthiness, because these are the reliable anchors of life, right? That's why we want to associate with these good, solid anchors that we can attach ourselves to. Why? Because none of us are so singularly strong that we can go through life in all its vagaries and all its vicissitudes without realizing that at many points we will not have confidence in ourselves. And we need these external forces to say, you can do it. You're going to be all right. And I think that takes a balance of self-acknowledgement, but making yourself sure that these external forces are there, even if it's a video online that says you can do it. Yeah.
So that you two are so eloquent at putting forth what I so strongly believe in, and that is everyone in life needs a loving critic, whether it's professional that has the knowledge that is vested in your success, but not emotionally attached to your outcome, or whether it's someone that you have in your personal life that's a trusted person that's not going to undermine you, that they're dealing with their own insecurities, that they're dealing with you and their leakage into you. And so that is such an amazing part of why I started imbibing in my life, because I was self-reliant, a go-getter, a blend of you two together, that type A, self-mastery. But I thought I had it all going. I thought I could do it all. And then when you're that kind of person, you have success, failure, because you weren't relying on others and having those good, healthy relationships. And then that aha moment happens and you say, wow, this is not a solo sport. Life is a team sport. And I need healthy people on my team, whether it's people that you have to reach out professionally, as Abby was saying, or they pass a trust test, as Joe was saying, having those loving critics is so critical, because then you can balance that dichotomy of self-mastery with also having mentors and guides in your life. Setting your path and asking yourself, I was literally thinking about this. I have someone in my life just celebrated an anniversary of being together with someone for a period of time. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, from that great quote from the presidential elections, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Asking ourselves that question, am I better off today? Am I making the progress I wanted than I was a couple years ago? And if not, what specifically is missing that you're not doing? Own it without that self-loathing, then seek those teachers, mentors, and guides to balance that equation. And a hard part of it, go ahead, Joe, you're going to say something I saw.
Yeah, because what you're making such great, great points. And I something just came to mind, you know, when you said, are you better today than 4 years ago? And that's a good question to ask yourself, because your stock is not always going to be, but we can overcome a lot. But the other thing we have to be careful with is, do we have false self-trust? And false self-trust can be very damaging. You know, when we've studied, for instance, malignant narcissists who have this extraordinary but false trust in themselves.
Exactly where I thought you were going to go with it.
They just don't know how dangerous they are. Yeah. And so one of the things that I would caution you is, if you aggregate these people around you, make sure that they are truly trustworthy. I mean, this is an area that Abby talks about, and not that they are falsely representing themselves as trustworthy, because you can surround yourself with people that in essence will let you down.
Yeah, that's why I love the words loving critic, objectivity. My wife is mine, and every time I hand her a copy, you know, that's going to be released for one of my podcasts goes out, I cringe, because I got to stand by for the look, you know. And she has her leakage on when I hand her something she doesn't like reading is hilarious, and she'll look like this. And I go, you don't like it? She goes, oh no, it's fine. I like, no, you don't think that.
By the way, you do a great furrowed glabella.
I know. I got to make sure.
I was going to say great emotional expressivity.
So I'm used to these things. But Joe, you make a great point. You just can't surround yourself by yes people, because it'll just feed the narcissism, and it creates a train wreck.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
Sorry. We take on the personalities of the people around us too. You know, we can't help but we do almost merge into our closest friends. There's so much research on this that we do take on the characteristics of those around us, both non-verbally through mimicry, but also, you know, their behavioral patterns. You're exposed to their behaviors, and then you start acting in a certain way. They're exposed to yours. And if you look at someone that you're close to and think, are those behaviors that I want to show in myself, are those behaviors that I'm proud of? You know, not everybody is perfect. We're not saying surround yourself with perfect people, of course, but surround yourself with people that emanate the kind of morality that you want to emanate too, because things like that are really important.
That's such a great point. One of the things I value is that humility and self-awareness. And I love people around me. It's why I love you too, because you have that self-awareness balanced with that competence, you know. So you know what your strengths are, but you're also very aware of what they're not. And when you're surrounded by people with that kind of health, when I brought new people on the behavioral team those years I was running it, that was one of my questions during the interview process is, what are your weaknesses? And I want to hear that transparency of what you know your weaknesses are, but I want to hear your plan that you have every day you overcome them, because human beings aren't looking for perfection. They're looking for effort. And so that's that kind of awareness, which brings us a great segue into one of the things that I think hinder us from our ability to do this is that shame. It's such a powerful topic. And I want to make sure we cover this and give it some time, because it is such a detriment. And so letting go of that shame is the hardest thing I think we have as human beings, you know. So let's talk about shame a little bit and how we might be able to start overcoming that.
I think when we talk about that self-trust, we say, you know, looking in upon ourselves, and we said we have to face those really dark parts, those really horrible parts that we have avoided. And a lot of the time when those dark parts are because of our own behaviors, we've done something we're not proud of, or maybe there's a part of us, you know, nothing we've done, but something we feel, and we feel ashamed to look at it. We don't look at it because it makes us feel horrible. You know, it makes us feel so uncomfortable looking at it. And when we feel shame, it's very difficult to take responsibility. And there's a very fine line, I think, between shame and responsibility, because we need to look and say, okay, you know, this is how I feel. This is what I've done. I take responsibility. I'm going to be better. But shame stops us from being able to say, okay, I've done this, and actually just want to push it away from us and to say, no, I couldn't have done this. You know, that's what stops us facing it, stop looking at it. It's very difficult to overcome that shame. And we see it with things like the victims. They've been victimized and they can't deal with their trauma because they feel shame, because they have almost taken personal responsibility in a really negative way, that it's their fault. You know, that they somehow did something to cause this behavior that happened to them. So they won't look at it and they won't deal with it. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and give advice on how to deal with your shame, because, again, it's personal. I think that's a journey that everybody needs to judge on their own, because, you know, it differs in intensities. How much shame do you feel? Do you feel so much shame that you physically can't look at it, that you really, you know, you think it would take you some time, but you could overcome it? Or is it something you really feel like you need professional help with? And I think that's something that only you can guide yourself to do, but speak to a professional if you need to, and take that journey, because it's, again, it sometimes makes us feel shame asking for help, because it makes us feel weak. Especially, you know, we see it in men. You know, we have this culture where men are, you know, and they need to be really big and strong and deal with things. And now we have this work culture of burnout, where you have to keep going no matter how sick you are. And when you take days off, you know, you feel shame. And we really need to just look at it as our health is the most important thing. If we are not healthy, we are not stable. We cannot be our best, and we cannot support other people. So we have to face these things. And if it means getting professional help, there is no shame in asking for help. You know, showing your weakness is actually strength.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating phenomenon, and I'll get your thoughts on it in a second, Joe. I do a lot of reading in this area, because every family deals with addiction issues. And for years and years, everyone marveled at Alcoholics Anonymous. How did, you know, these gentlemen back in the 20s and 30s crack the nut on alcoholism when no one else could? No psychiatrist could, no psychologist, no one could do it. And they finally cracked it because they formed meetings and they came up with the 12 steps. And part of that was sharing and letting go of shame, because you could actually be transparent and relate to someone in a safe environment. And I've witnessed something in the last bunch of years, because, you know, on Instagram, they actually have alcohol-free groups. I actually participated in an alcohol-free January, and all of a sudden I became alcohol-free in my own life as well. And because you're seeing the benefits of it. But what I found really remarkable was it wasn't the model of AA as a group. It was actually the thing they were doing. And that was, they're allowing people to let go of their shame in a safe environment by being transparent, because transparency is a huge aspect of, I think, self-trust. And what I found is, when I was, again, all my observations are obviously anecdotal, but I'm seeing these same types of communities, both on Instagram and social media, that are allowing people to share in a safe environment and overcome their shame because they can be transparent. And it's having the same effect as AA did all those years ago. So I actually, for the first time, I'm seeing this great process coupled with the other amazing aspect of it, the sharing, which lets go of the shame, and then being of service to others, is also a huge part of people overcoming internal shame, because you can then say, hey, look, this is me on my journey, and I can be available for you on yours. And I'm not perfect, and neither are you, but it's okay. Again, it comes down to that, having that self-awareness also of it's okay. Joe, thoughts on shame?
Oh my gosh. When we were talking the other day, and you brought up this topic, and all of a sudden it began to, it's like the Big Bang Theory. All of a sudden it was a singularity, and then it just started expanding, because I started to think, just look at societies. You have societies that are shame-based, You have societies that are shame and guilt based. They're not both the same. And then I started thinking about all the implications, not just in my life, but I'll give you an example. You know, television does and the media does a job of seeing FBI agents as being almost robotic in suits and so forth. And I remember being in Oklahoma right after the bombing. I was there on day three, and we were still pulling little children out of that bombed building, the Murrah building. And I remember coming back to the main office building after a day of work, and there were cards, little poster cards that have been made by local children, and they had their little hands on it and thanking us. And you saw FBI agents looking at each other saying, "Is it okay to cry?" Yeah, it's okay to cry. There's no shame in crying. And, you know, we all broke down. To this day, I remember it. And how interesting that society put so much pressure on us that we would be ashamed of crying. If you can't cry at the loss of a child, many children, I forget now how many, then there is no shame. And then you have the other extreme, which you and I both experience, where you have individuals that have no shame and the total absence of shame, right? What does that translate into? The absence of shame is what we see in psychopathy,
right?
I mean, unequivocally. And so, you know, the high shame, which is used to, unfortunately, at times control us. When I think of those young women in the U.S. Olympics who were so ashamed at times to say anything. When I look at, you know, I have this article in Psychology Today where I talked about predation in the clergy and how these predators use shame to keep people from talking. This is a topic that really needs to be explored deeply because it inhibits us. I know someone that, you know, quit law school because he felt that he couldn't measure up and was had this, you know, internal shame. And at the same time, it can be inhibitive of others in coming forth and saying, you know, this is, you know, when nowadays when you hear about a child who wants to come out to his parents and they have shame, it can be totally debilitating, and it can also be very abused. So, I mean, it's really, you know, when you dropped that on us the other day, it's a very profound subject, Robin.
Thanks. It's something that affects us all, and we both internally, you know, intrinsically and extrinsically, it goes into trust, both in ourselves and in others. When we witness it, it's devastating when you see someone. And it's also because I one of the things that I abhor in life, and that is power. And it's probably because I was an exerciser of it without realizing it, because power is about self. It's about popularity. It's about look at me. And leadership is about others. And shame is a tool of the powerful and the tool of the manipulative, which is, it goes against every foundation that I hold true. And so I really want to do all we can to really help people overcome it, recognize it. Again, life is a journey, not a destination. But if we can, as Joe, as you say, and I say it as on many podcasts I can, so if we have at least one bit of information that can benefit another human being, especially in this area, shame on us for not getting it to us. See that? Shame on us for not getting it to them. Yeah. You know, but I think it's a great and powerful topic that hopefully we stirred some thoughts on it. And for those listening, think, be honest with yourself, get some loving critics, whether it's professionally or those people you trust deeply in your life, and take a good look and make some movement forward. Life isn't about perfection. It's not about going from 0 to 100. It's about increase that tempo just a little bit. What are you going to do today? Not why things are like they are, but what? Don't be a victim. Take control. Have a positive outlook that you can do something. That's what the greatest thing about life is. You can always do something. So with that, any last thoughts on anything we chatted with?
Just leave people with, you know, that everything starts with understanding. We can't be better in ourselves. We can't be better in our relationships if we don't understand what's going on. So we need to explore ourselves. We need to try and understand ourselves and realize it's normal to have a bit of shame. Like Joe said, we don't want to completely have no shame. It's so normal to have a bit of shame. But recognize when there's too much and it's limiting our ability to reflect on ourselves, and realize that it's not about being perfect. It's just about knowing that you are working towards a person that you want to be, and you are acting in a way that supports your morals.
Perfect. Joe, anything?
Yeah, nicely stated. You know, years ago, Gavin De Becker wrote The Gift of Fear, we should be grateful for the gift of shame. Because without shame, in essence, we would have a lawless society.
True.
Shame has its benefits, but we also have to realize that, you know, you often see this with people who are reluctant to get on stage and speak. They're ashamed, and I always say to them, nobody wants you to fail. They want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. Well, yeah, but what if I stumble? Yeah, what if? So you stumble. You think I haven't? You know, we have to look at shame and say it has its benefits. But I think it takes us back to, again, those loving critics that you often speak about, the benign critics who you surround yourself with. Who can say it's all right? You can cry. You can reveal something. You can be open. And what I would tell you to do is find those people that you can trust, so that when you feel that you can't trust yourself, so that you feel that maybe you're ashamed of something, they can put you back on that railroad track and say, no, you can do this. And there is no shame in crying, in revealing, in exposing something.
Perfect. Because each of us here, you look at where each of us is today, and it looks beautiful. It looks majestic. It looks like that was all part of the plan and path, but no, it did not happen alone. It happened with a lot of stumbles along the way. It took loving critics that were vested in our success, that were there for us when we needed it. And likewise, we were there for them, because it's not a one-way street. It's a collaboration. Life is a beautiful collaboration. With that, my two Jedi Masters, thank you for joining me on the council today. I can't wait for the next one. And for everyone listening, please tune in to each of their individual episodes, because there is more magnificence coming out of each of them. And again, thank you all for tuning in to the Forged by Trust podcast. We will see y'all next time. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Forged by Trust. If you enjoyed the show, took away a few new tools, I hope you will leave a great review of the show to show your support. If you are interested in more information about how to forge your own trust-building strategies, please visit my website at www.peopleformula.com. You can also follow me on my social media sites included in the show notes. I'm looking forward to sharing my next Forged by Trust episode with you soon.